Next case today is United States versus Zamali.
Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bill Stanton, and I represent defendant appellant Bassam Zamali. After initially being charged in the 16-count indictment with wire fraud, Mr. Zamali pled guilty to an information containing two counts of wire fraud in connection with a link card scheme. Essentially, what would happen would be link card benefit holders would exchange their benefits for discounted amounts of cash. Mr. Zamali was sentenced to 51 months in the Bureau of Prisons, and he appeals that sentence, contending that the district court erred in determining a loss amount and that the district court clearly erred in denying him acceptance of responsibility credit. As it relates to the loss finding, it's our position that the district court's loss finding was completely inadequate. The government conceded at page 33 of its brief that the district court did not expressly state its reasons in coming up with a loss amount. Based on that, we feel that a non-deferential standard of review applies at this stage. Now, if you review the sentencing transcript, it's clear that the district court was all over the map when it was talking about the loss in this case. Page 26 of the appendix, the district court, in response to defense counsel stating that Mr. Zamali intended to pay back the loss amount in restitution, the district court inquired, he would pay back $1 million or $1.4 million. Then on page 34 of the appendix.
Now, does that mean that an admission? Is that how much he owed?
Correct.
Okay, so he's.
That was the initial question that the district court asked defense counsel, and defense counsel said he'd pay back this money in restitution, the loss amount. Now, on page 34, after Mr. Zamali had spoken in elocution, and again iterated that he would pay back the loss amount, the district court asked Mr. Zamali, you are going to pay back $2 million. And then on the following page, on page 35 of the appendix, the district court states, the amount of loss is substantial. The amount of money is in the millions of dollars. So anywhere from $1 million initially to millions of dollars without ever clearly stating what it found the loss amount to be. And that's important in this case because it was the defendant's position that the loss amount was between $400,000 and $1 million, specifically around $619,000, which would warrant a 14-level increase under the guidelines.
What period of time are these losses accrued from when to when?
Sure. Bassam Zamali owned and operated a store called Homan, and that was from November 6, 1995, till April 22nd of 1999, when that store was kicked out of the food stamp program. Now, there's also a store owned by a gentleman named Hatem Fariz. That store was called T&T, and the period of fraud for that store was May 1999 to December of 2001. There's a third store called Amber, owned by a gentleman named Aziz Ali, and Bassam Zamali strenuously objected to his inclusion in that fraud that took place at that store. The fraud at that store essentially took place from June of 2002 to November of 2002, and Bassam Zamali said that he was not a part of that fraud at all.
Now, his brother, when did he cut out? He left the scene very early.
Well,
the
indictment comes down, I believe, in 2007, and the brother has not been heard from since the indictment came down.
He's labeled a fugitive, and supposedly in Jordan.
He's a fugitive, supposedly in the Middle East in Jordan, correct.
And, of course, your client attributes most of the
various
deeds to him. He got him into it, right?
I think based on both the witness interviews and what Bassam Zamali had to say in his sentencing memorandum and to the district court at sentencing, his brother was the one that was running the show here. especially as it relates to TNT and Amber, the two later stores. Bassam took full responsibility for Holman. That was the one that was initially started in 95 up until 99. He was the owner. He was the operator. He was on the paperwork. And Bassam said, that one's on me. Holman was mine. As it relates to TNT, Bassam said, you know, my brother was doing the fraud there, but I would on occasion go cash checks for him. He'd make checks out to me. I'd run to the bank, and I would cash checks. And his position there was that he cashed about $219,000 worth of checks for TNT. Now, as it relates to Amber, there was a loss that the government calculated of about $770,000. And Bassam said that he, not once did he commit fraud at Amber. He was not involved with that store. Now, how he's included in the fraud at Amber is based on the statements of the owner of Amber. That's a gentleman by the name of Aziz Ali. And essentially what Ali says is Khaled, Bassam's brother, he's the one that started this. He said, if you let me use the link card machine at your store, I'll give you a 10% cut of the profits. Okay.
Can you explain that just briefly? What they carry a stack of link cards?
Essentially what the allegation is Khaled Zamali or whoever would come into the store with a stack of link cards, usually with, I guess, Post-its with the PIN numbers on it. Swipe the cards through the machine, enter the amount, and...
Does that strip them clean?
Usually not, but usually what they do is they'll enter an amount. In this case, usually it's about 50 to 70% higher than what they were giving the link card holders back in return in cash. So you give me your link card, I'll charge $140 to it, and I'll give you $100.
But see, somebody else has got this handful. The owner of this link card isn't even there, right?
Sometimes, correct.
Well, I got the impression, that's what was weird, is coming in with a stack of these things.
Right.
That somebody, I'll call it entrusted to them, to take a limited amount out of that link card.
Correct.
So it doesn't strip it clean.
Correct.
Then they give them back, I guess.
Correct.
Okay. Well,
okay. So as it relates to loss, we feel that there's a total of $619,000 in loss that's attributable to Bassam, and that the offense level should be increased by 14 levels. Even taking the government's figures as correct, we think that if markup is applied to each store, like the government applied in this case to Amber, an additional $440,000 would come off their $2.83 million loss figure. That would put it in the area of $1 million to $2.5 million loss, which would be deserving of a 16-point increase instead of a 14. Again, that's important as it relates to the guidelines. Only one store in this case was there a markup applied to, and the government applied a 50% markup rate.
Only one store, there was what, a markup price, did you
right,
say?
Right. Essentially, the goods sold are sold at a profit. People don't run stores to break even. And the government, we believe a conservative, but for the sake of argument, set a figure at 50% markup is what these goods are being sold for. If that markup
that's
is taken...
That's what it would be if there were no fraud, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So if this markup is applied to Holman and TNT as it was to Amber, then $440,000 worth of loss dissipates, and that puts Mr. Zamali, again, into a level 60.
Who determined the amount of legitimate inventory that was sold?
What's that?
Who determined the amount of legitimate inventory that was sold?
Well, that depends on the calculations, and it depends on the store.
But this is all an estimate, right?
There's
no records of any of this, right?
Well, for the third store, they had records of the inventory that was bought. They had the bank records.
Is that
records.
TNT, or is that?
That's Amber.
Oh, Amber.
Uh-huh. And then for the TNT store, they had records for 21 months out of the approximate 29 to 30 months that the fraud existed as to what was paid for inventory, what was paid to distributors. So they had about 75% of that period. They could estimate what was actually going out to buy goods to restock the store.
So there's not, is there any question about any of these stores being legitimate? I know that at least one other case that I was on, I recall it was just a joke. They just had kind of junk food in there and stuff.
Sure. I think the best evidence of that is a USDA official visits the store, I believe it's Holman in this case, to follow up on the application and takes pictures and documents what's inside that store. And while the official essentially concluded that the store is doing more business than anticipated or than it should be, the pictures and the report make clear that the store is fully stocked with items that are eligible to be sold in the link card program. With that, if there's no other questions, I'll take a seat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Stanton. My name is Madeline Murphy. I'm appearing on behalf of the United States, and I'm asking the Court to affirm the District Court's sentencing decision. The calculations leading to the amount of loss were not clearly erroneous, and the Court's recitation, though extremely brief, was adequate to uphold the record. I would first like to address the calculations themselves for the three stores at issue here, because I think there might be a little bit of confusion in the record. There are two different methods of calculating the amount of food stamp loss in a food stamp fraud case, and those methods depend on the available records that exist at the time that the amount of loss is calculated. In this case, we had three stores. We had Holman, we had TNT, we had Amber Foods. For both Holman and for TNT, there were no complete or nearly complete sets of stock records, bank records, invoices, et cetera, from which the amount of eligible food stamp or eligible food sales type items could have been extrapolated. So using the method that this Court approved in cases like Hussein and Albury, we used the estimated annual food stamp eligible sales appearing on the application for the stores for Holman and TNT, and compared that amount with the actual food stamp redemptions for those stores for the applicable periods of time. So this is comparing a projected food stamp sales with actual food stamp redemptions. This isn't a situation where any sort of a markup should come into play. We're comparing retail sales essentially with retail sales. We used a different method for Amber Foods because we had much, much more evidence, more records as to what the actual food sales for Amber were. We had invoices, receipts, et cetera, that made it possible for us to estimate the food stamp eligible items that were purchased for Amber, and then we applied a 50% retail markup to those wholesale values that we got from the evidence, and thereby arrived at the estimate of what the food stamp loss was.
You're saying you said the wholesale evidence, you mean you have the records from the vendor, the supplier, whatever you want to call them, the people who supply the bread and various other things to the store?
Yes, we did have those types of records for Amber, Judge, though we did not have them for Holman and for TNT.
Now, is there a claim then that their projections were way low and therefore they sold a lot more than they projected? Is that what they're claiming? You said something about based it on projections when they applied, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so they have a projection. Let's just say it's $400,000 or something. Is there a claim now that their projections were low and they actually had $800,000 sales or what?
Defendant Zamali is claiming that the projections that were placed on the application for his store, Holman, and for the second store, TNT, were understated, that the actual sales ended up being much more than that. But since he was unable to produce any viable evidence of that fact, then we reverted back to the acceptable method of calculation that this Court has approved in situations where there are no records and there is no other acceptable estimate for the amount of food stamp eligible sales other than that figure which appears on the store's food stamp application, which is made by the owner of the store and is certified that it is true and correct.
I assume those projections are based, you know, when food stamp authorities authorize a certain amount, I guess then there must be some validity to a projection. Somebody must know what they're, when they look at it, they have a projection of a certain amount. What does a food stamp person do? I'm vague on this because I don't know exactly how somebody approves a projection.
Judge, the applicant fills out his application, and there is a question which asks him for the projected annual food stamp sales, and the applicant fills in that figure based on his or her own experience in running that store.
So nobody does an on-site, and before approval, nobody does any on-site look at the store?
There will be a visit to the store to see that it carries appropriate quantities of the four staple food groups, but nobody sits down with a calculator and at USDA and does any work to verify that that projected food stamp sales is in fact correct.
Well, the perplexing thing to me at least is that this stacked up to $2.8 million.
The total loss for the three stores we calculated as $2.83 million.
Whoever food stamp folks, agents, I don't know what you call them, get wind that there's something going wrong before it gets to $2.8 million?
This occurred at three separate stores, Your Honor, all three
yeah,
of which.
From, they hopscotch from one to the next.
They
is
did
that,
hop-
is that typical, where when somebody gets nailed, they just go to another place? The last case I had, that's what happened.
That is not uncommon, Your Honor. I've done a number of these cases.
We're talking now with food stamps. Now I just heard the figure. It was 47 million people on food stamps.
I have heard that estimate in the news.
Well, I'm frustrated with this because this drags on so long, and this is a huge amount of money, and must be pervasive throughout the whole system.
Judge, what happened in this case, and I've seen in other cases, was that a particular owner, in this case, Bassam Zemaili, was the authorized owner for Home and Foods, engaged in food stamp fraud. That store was cut off. Some months later, T&T, another store, is authorized under a different owner's name, Hatem Fariz, and that store engaged in food stamp fraud for a period of time, and then that is cut off. And then a few months later, a third owner, Aziz Ali, applies for authorization for the third store, Amber Foods. We have three different owners here.
He's got his finger in all three of them.
He does have his finger in all three of them. That is correct, Your Honor.
Because why is he still operating after one?
To the knowledge of USDA, he is not operating these stores. He is engaging as was charged.
Well, what was he charged with in the first one?
Bassam Zemaili was the authorized owner of that store, so he was responsible for the scheme for the first store, for Home and Foods. USDA was not aware of his affiliation with TNT, the subsequent store, because he was not the authorized owner. His co-conspirator, Hatem Fariz, was the authorized owner. This is something
I guess I want to know, how does he co-conspire if he should have been convicted and put somewhere?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat that?
He's still out doing this. That's what I wonder. If you have this kind of fraud where hundreds of thousands of dollars and then they keep operating, I don't understand that.
Well, he's not out doing it anymore, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay.
After the third store, we were able to identify it.
$2.8 million.
Unfortunately, yes. We were able to identify it. It takes a bank records analysis to see who is getting the profits of the scheme to identify who the co-conspirators are. So that was the reason why a retail markup figure was used for the calculations for Amber Foods, though it was not used for the calculations for Home and Food and for TNT. Because those Home and Food and TNT involved a calculation that compared projected retail sales with actual retail sales. No markup came into play for those particular stores. Mr. Stanton mentioned that in Homan, the initial store, that the USDA had visited the store and had remarked that it was a popular store and took pictures of the stock. What he has neglected to mention to this court was that the individual at USDA who visited that store noted specifically on his report the redemptions for this store seem high. So the fact that USDA went to the store and took pictures of the available food stock does not support any argument that that somehow Homan was not engaging in food stamp fraud or was engaging in food stamp fraud to a lesser degree, since it was obvious to the USDA at the time of the visit that the redemptions seemed high. Regardless of the method that was used for calculating the amount of loss for the three stores, that method was approved in a variety of cases by this court based on the type of available data for each of the individual stores, which makes this case a little bit confusing, as it does involve three separate stores with different types of data for the three separate stores. And though the court was not specific in adopting the government's loss calculations, it's clear from the record that the court accepted the facts as set forth in the pre-sentence report and accepted the guideline range as set forth by the United States. So therefore, even though he could have said more, it's clear from the record that the court adopted the government's guideline calculations in their entirety. And unless the court has any further questions for me, I will ask the panel to affirm the district court's sentencing calculations and sentence. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And.